From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point, a big election in Greece this weekend. A win for the far left, the Syriza party. They reject the path of austerity imposed by lenders when the Greek economy melted down. They call for serious renegotiation of Greek debt. And that debt is still huge. There is a stark clash here. Greece wants a break. Germany and others in the EU are saying no way. If Greece gets a pass, other countries may join that line. Anger is growing all over Europe. This hour on Point, the Greek revolt against austerity. And what comes next? You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you with the Greeks saying hell no, saying enough? Are you with the Germans saying deal with it? Could Europe, the global banking system, crack on this? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Voices from this big vote in Europe, in Greece and beyond. In his victory speech in Athens on Sunday, anti-austerity party leader Alexis Tsipras, 40 years old, leader of Greece now, said an era of national humiliation is over.
The new Greek government will be ready to cooperate and negotiate for the first time with our partners. We want a fair, beneficial and viable solution so that Greece can leave behind the vicious circle of debt.
The vicious circle of debt, the cycle of austerity. On Sunday in Athens, after the election, this woman told the BBC she was optimistic about the future.
We have the possibility to stop just surviving and start living. And so this is a great night for everybody in this country. So everybody's so happy that you can see that in the eyes of the people and in the smile of the people. We know that it's going to be difficult, but we're not afraid.
Is everybody on board? No. The World Economic Forum last week on the eve of the elections, German Finance Minister Wolfgang Schäuble defended strict austerity measures.
Solidarity doesn't mean constantly handing out money you don't have. That's called incurring debts. Rather, solidarity means solving problems and confidently justifying your solutions.
But Greece has chosen its own way. We'll see where it goes. Joining me first today from Athens, Greece, is John Tsiropoulos, independent journalist there, blogging at the New Athenian. John, welcome back to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. My pleasure.
So you have a new prime minister. His party took just over a third of the vote, but that was enough for him to take it. And how are Greeks reading the meaning of this vote, John?
I think the 36.3% result of the popular vote was actually beyond expectations. It was in line, roughly, with opinion polls before the election. But don't forget that the previous conservative-led government, which was a coalition with socialists, had only achieved 29% of the vote back in 2012, and the socialists came in with another 12%. So this is not bad, actually, because Greece, since the beginning of the crisis, hasn't been able to form single-party governments. The last time that happened was 2009. And the reason is that there has been a great deal of migration from the two traditional parties, the socialists and the conservatives. It was a two-party system for 35 years here, very much like Republicans and Democrats. But that has now broken down during the crisis as people have become disillusioned with those two parties, partly because it is they who plunged Greece into over-indebtedness in the first place and couldn't solve the problem with European creditors. So 36% is not bad. Greeks are reacting to it ambivalently. Some people are very optimistic, like the young lady you interviewed there on the streets of Athens on election night. Some people are afraid that the worst may happen. In other words, the confrontation with creditors that would result in an impasse for the Greek economy, because Greece cannot, on the basis of homegrown tax revenues, meet all of its debt obligations this year, as well as civil servants' salaries and the shoring up of the pension system. Those are the three big public sector bills. Greece will need to see eye to eye with its creditors this year. So that is the big Damoclean sword, if you like, over this government. And some people here are expressing fears about how well Mr. Tsipras and his team, who are untested, will manage, will navigate these waters with their creditors. However, even those people who have their doubts are willing for the moment to keep quiet and give this team the benefit of the doubt.
John, we'll look in a moment at what the new Prime Minister Tsipras is proposing here, what he's taking to the rest of Europe and to creditors. But take us back first. For a lot of Americans, this is far away and not right in front of them all the time. When you talk about the crisis, in Greece. Just remind us what you're talking about there. What happened, what Europe's response to it was, and what that has meant for Greece.
Well, the crisis here goes back to 2008, as it does for the United States, mm-hmm. where the financial system, of course, broke down on account of bad housing loans. That had a knock-on effect on the European financial system. European governments all spent public money shoring up their banking systems. The Greek government at that time spent 28 billion euros shoring up the Greek banking system. But the Greeks had a knock-on effect because of the over-indebtedness of the public sector, not the private sector. Mm-hmm. The private sector was indebted to quite a healthy degree by Western standards. But here the government couldn't continue to borrow in order to refinance its debts in the Western banking system simply because the threat level of a Greek default had gone up so much that that drove up the interest rate which Greeks could pay. And Greece sold its last multiple-year bond in March of 2010 at 6%, which was already deemed unaffordable. At that point, it had to go to the European banking, to the European finance ministers in the Eurozone, its fellow currency partners, and say to them, we need money. We need to borrow from somebody in the public sector. We can no longer borrow from the private sector.
They got the money, but it came with a demand for austerity. What has that austerity program looked like, and what have its implications been?
The austerity was attached to the money that the Europeans lent Greece. First came a loan of 100 billion euros, and then 2 years later, another 130 billion euros. And, excuse me, 110 the first time around. And that came with a memorandum of points of reform and cost-cutting. The cost-cutting was easy because it was simply a matter of reducing state salaries across the board and reducing pensions for the state retirees and private sector retirees. But eventually, that method had an enormous social cost and an enormous political cost to the Socialist Party that carried them out. And that meant that, yes, the budget was balanced over a period of 4 years. Roughly $40 billion worth of government spending were cut, but that eventually came back to bite the Socialists because they lost the election in 2012. The Conservatives came in and, in partnership with the Socialists, continued the austerity measures. But again, they have been unseated in this election. So the Greeks are basically saying that they are going to destroy the political forces that continue to bow to European demands for cost cuts. They want a much more creative approach. They want growth in the economy, and they do not want the country to be beholden to the dictates of other countries with which Greece is legally and theoretically an equal.
Of course, it's hard to insist upon that when you're so deeply in debt to many of those countries. Austerity has been very hard on the Greek economy. The GDP has shrunk by 25%. That's kind of incredible. Greek debt now equals 175% of GDP, one of the very highest in the world. Is that what the new Prime Minister Tsipras is talking about when he talks about the sort of austerity enslavement or the being trapped in a cycle of austerity?
That's exactly right. Tsipras is saying two things. He's saying on the money, it's simply technically impossible for us to continue to pay. That is a point on which even economists and other political leaders in Europe actually agree. Everyone knows that the Greek debt is unsustainable. If the Greek economy were growing at 5% a year or more, then it would be sustainable, but it isn't. The other thing that Tsipras is saying is that politically it is wrong for any country to be treated this way. When a individual or a company is overborrowed and over-indebted, then they do lose the power or a lot of their power to negotiate with their creditors, but it shouldn't be the same with a country, with a sovereign nation. That is a different nature of debt, and it's a different nature of negotiation, says Tsipras. And the time has come now for the Europeans to stop telling Greece what to do and to sit down with Greece and talk about what Greece can do.
Well, that's fine, but they still owe the money. What do Greeks in his party, let's say or think when Germans say, look, you borrowed the money, now do what it takes to pay it back?
Well, I interviewed the newly appointed finance minister about this months ago, and at that time he felt that what should be done was a write-off of up to half of the Greek debt, 40 or 50%, a simple write-down. Both private and public investors should say, we're not going to get this money back. We need to hope for $50 instead of $100. However, he felt that that would be politically very difficult in Europe, and he thought at that time that the solution that the Europeans would probably end up proposing would be a long extension of the debt maturity. In other words, the period over which Greece can repay that money.
Yeah.
And that does, and that simply extends the repayment period into the future, 20, 30 years, far enough for Greece to be able to manage those payments.
Does it appear at this point, John, that Tsipras can go to Europe, to the central bank, the Germans and more, and cut a deal that will satisfy the people who voted him into office? He's promised a lot in terms of relief.
Well, if... yes, I mean, I think that the idea of the debt, the maturity extension, is one that Europe is willing to discuss. That's what we're hearing from very senior sources in the Greek finance world. And that's what we're hearing from people in political circles as well, that this is a discussion that can happen. What will the Europeans ask for in return is the question. And what else will Syriza put on the table? Because Syriza has very, very often repeated the mantra that no country should be asked to meet debt installments, even if they have been agreed to, if they are in recession. So if the economy isn't growing by, say, 2 or 3 or 4%, then some sort of clause would kick into the contract, the new contract that Greece hopes to write down with its creditors, that would give Greece a suspension, a relief from payments until its economy is back in growth.
Greece so looking to kind of rewrite the terms of how things work in the world in Europe, or they have worked anyway. John Syropoulos, it's great to have you with us. Please stand by in Athens. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the great Greek rejection of austerity, what it says about what it means for Europe, maybe more of the world, our economies, our economics, our financial system. You can join us this hour. Behind us right there, supporters of Syriza, the party that's just won, along with a little coalition partner, is taking control of the government of Greece. And they're saying no to the austerity that's been imposed there. Here was Alexis Tsipras, the new prime minister of Greece, 40 years old, saying the Greeks wrote history with their vote on Sunday, interpreted by the BBC.
With this, Greece turns the page, leaves behind the poverty of catastrophe, leaves behind the fear, leaves 5 years of humiliation.
Catastrophe and humiliation left behind. In November, a lot of Greeks were in the streets protesting austerity. Here's one, interpreted by Reuters.
Our lives are composed of three words, struggle, struggle, and more struggle. They don't want us to demand our rights. But what rights anyway? They've taken them all away.
But the rest of Europe is looking on. Not everybody is so sympathetic to this. Here's British Prime Minister David Cameron. This was after the far-left Syriza party won Greece's general election on Sunday. Cameron saying the election will show warning signs for the global economy.
Instability in the eurozone, less rapid growth from the developing economies. These things, these warning signs, I believe, point even more to the importance of sticking to our long-term economic plan that is delivering, rather than taking a risk with the people who got us into this mess with their plans for more borrowing, more spending, more tax.
Stick with the plan. And, of course, the UK has done a lot with austerity. John Syropoulos, journalist out of Athens, has been with us there from Greece. With us right now from London is Christopher Pissarides, professor of economics at the London School of Economics, Nobel Prize winner for economics in the year 2010. Professor Pissarides, thank you very much for joining us.
Good afternoon. Good morning, rather, for you.
It's wonderful to have you here. You have said it's time to end the austerity here. Why?
Because it's not working. We should be flexible when we're following economic policies. The idea behind the austerity 4 years ago sounded good. You have heavy debts, therefore save some money to repay your debts. That's what every household would do. Basically, the Greek government was bankrupt in 2010, going up to 11, 12. But since then, the situation got worse. And when a policy is not working, then intelligent people follow a flexible approach. They revise the policy to make it work for the benefit of everyone.
Here's the German Chancellor, Angela Merkel. This was just last year, but you can hear her view on this.
Saying,
nobody knows how things will develop in Greece, but as Chancellor, I have responsibility for ensuring the pressure for reform in Greece does not let up. What about the German view, Professor Pissarides, that this pressure of austerity is important to get a country to do very difficult things?
Yeah, now those are two entirely different things. The pressure for reform, all right, forget pressure. The reform is necessary in Greece because over the years, it's become a very uncompetitive economy. It's got nothing to do with the debt, the uncompetitiveness of the economy. It's an economy which has been subject to a lot of regulation, an oversized public sector, lots of interference of the government with the way the labor market functions, lots of corruption. It's the laggard of Europe. You know, it's one of the most regulated, misfunctioning economies in Europe. Reforms are absolutely necessary. Now, what Mrs. Merkel is saying is that unless you put pressure on the Greeks by telling them that there is no money, that they have to save more and more, they are not going to undertake those reforms. But there is some, and this is a very big but, we know as economists, and we've always known ever since the Great Depression of the 1930s, in fact, that reforms are not effective when you are undertaking them during a program of austerity. We know that they take long to have an impact on the economy. And ironically enough, only 5 days ago, I was in Davos at the World Economic mm-hmm. Forum meetings, and I went to a meeting where the Deputy Finance Minister of Germany, a guy called Mr. Gabriel, said that in 2002, when Germany started its structural reforms to improve the competitiveness of its economy, because let me remind you that in 2002, Germany was labeled the sick man of Europe. It was an economy brought down by regulation. They reformed that, but what Gabriel said was that they felt that under a fiscal policy that balanced the budget, not even austerity, but balancing the budget, the reforms were not going to be effective. So they decided to break European Union agreements about budget deficits, known as the Maastricht Treaty, to have bigger budget deficits during the reform process because they felt that that would make their reforms more effective. And they did it, and he said they were justified because the reforms worked. So I was there with some colleagues. We did ask him. We said to him, well, why don't you allow Greece to do the same? And he just smiled. I should say that Mr. Gabriel doesn't belong to Mrs. Merkel's party. He's a member of the coalition. He belongs to the Social Democrats under Gerhard Schröder, the previous chancellor, who is the one who actually undertook those reforms at the time. But he's a member of the German government.
Professor, stand by, if you would. We have a lot of callers, questions and comments. Let me bring them to you. Ray in North Kingston, Rhode Island. You're on with our Nobel Prize-winning economist, Ray. What's your thought?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
And I certainly don't pretend to be a global economist, but absolutely, Greece should repay their debt. You know, they went into it knowing what the conditions were, and, you know, if they couldn't hold the line and do what they needed to do, then too bad.
What if it's not working, Ray? I understand exactly the impulse you're articulating there. But if their economy's shrunk by 25%, you know, if the economy's being crushed by the demands of austerity, how are they supposed to pay back? Does that make a difference, or just bite the bullet harder?
No, not to me. I mean, if I borrowed $1,000 from you at 7% mm-hmm. interest, mm-hmm. and then 6 months later or 3 years later said, well, you know, I'm only going to pay you $500.
Yeah.
You know, a deal is a deal. And
Ray, we got it. Let me take it to our economist right there, and I appreciate your call. Professor Pissarides, a deal is a deal. The Greeks borrowed the money. They knew the terms.
Well, let me ask your listener one question. In the 1940s, as you know, Germany went into war, and they destroyed big chunks of the war, mainly Europe. They caused destruction. I don't have to go through and
plenty in Greece. Yeah,
in the 1940s, mm-hmm. Germany.
Mm-hmm.
They borrowed money to do that. When they came out of the war, they had very heavy debts, and the United States government came and said, "Here is a Marshall Plan. Here is lots of money to help Europe reconstruct." It was a gift. They gave Europe a gift, which was tremendous for Europe, and Europe has joined the Western Alliance and it was doing well. By 1953, Germany could not pay any more of its debts because it was in deep trouble and it was not recovering. And they said, this debt is unsustainable. Mm-hmm. We cannot pay. What can we do? What do you think the United States government did? They said, forget it. We don't want the money back. We want your economy to grow and prosper because this will be good for the Western Alliance. It will be good for Europe. That's what they did, and we saw the result.
So going to war and borrowing for it, that can be forgiven, but I don't know. Having too high of pensions or building too many beach houses, that we can't forgive. Ray, I'm curious how you think about that. I know we've lost you here. Professor Pissarides, stand by. I want to bring one more voice in here. And John Seropoulos in Athens. Jacob Kierkegaard joins us. He's at the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington, senior fellow there, co-author of Transforming the European Economy. Peterson Institute, very big on balancing budgets. Jacob Kierkegaard, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
We let Germany off the hook after World War II and all the destruction of that. Why not let Greece off the hook a bit now?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the 1953 debt restructuring analogy is sort of a selective reading of history, because part of the reason we wanted to let Germany off the hook was that we wanted German support during the Cold War. We wanted actually Germany to be able to spend more as its own defense. And so this idea that this was just done to allow Germany to consume more is in my opinion, missing the broader
context.
But,
you know, Europe's economy was on its back at that time, and it did boom after that time.
Absolutely. But I mean, remember, I mean, if you wanna stretch this analogy, then you could say that, well, actually, Germany, as a result of the agreements after World War II, was actually implemented a constitution that was imposed upon it by the victors, a whole host of structural reforms. They did all that before they got debt relief. So if you really want to stretch it, you could say that in some ways, what the euro area is asking Greece to do now is, and I completely agree with the previous speakers, that debt restructuring of the officially held 80% of Greek debt is on the table. There is a deal to be had. But the political chronology of this deal in Europe is in some ways not dissimilar to what it was back in the 1950s, is that you do the reforms first, and then we talk about structural reform. Then we talk about debt relief. And that's what the question is. Will the new government in Greece be able to deliver the reforms that are embodied in the current Troika program or the Troika review of the Greek economy? If he's able to do that, yes, absolutely, I believe the Europeans, led by the Germans and others, will be willing to write down the net present value of the Greek debt.
Let me take that to Athens. John Seropoulos, what about those reforms that have been requested, required? What progress has been made on them? What's the new government saying about those? Could they complete those before they get this restructuring?
Some of them have been completed. For example, just before this latest socialist conservative coalition fell from power, they passed legislation that was key to solving the problem of 80 billion euros worth of non-performing loans in the private sector. Banks couldn't write those loans off. They couldn't sell them at discount because the legal framework wasn't there. There has been a lot of legal spadework to perform in this sort of fashion. It takes place far from the light of publicity. It isn't very glamorous, and its effects aren't immediately apparent. It doesn't produce growth within a month or two. However, the last 3 years have seen some legislation of that kind. What they've seen a lot more of, however, is simple cost-cutting, people seeing their income drop by about a third because the market has been depressed and because salaries have been cut and pensions have been cut. And that is what has grabbed the headlines. So the problem is that the reform has been out of step with the austerity.
Let's get a call from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Art is on the line. Hi, Art. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom. So I'm with the Germans, the Greeks, and the Americans who don't think austerity is the answer for these problems. The big picture is this massive redistribution of wealth to what they call the 1%. And if German debt could be relieved so that they could be our allies in the Cold War, then maybe people should think about the Greeks who are committing suicide, the poor people in Milwaukee with 50% rate of unemployment for black folks, who are, many of whom are, you know, resulting to violence and all sorts of self-destructive stuff. And that's where really the big picture, I think, you need to look at working people, and they're getting a shorter and shorter part of the stick, and whether it's in Greece or the rest of Europe or in Wisconsin.
So you see a class issue here in a way. What if, though, public budgets, and this happened in Greece and in many American states as well, Wisconsin, Illinois, what if pensions get out ahead of what the public can afford, and then you get all this debt? I mean, what about that problem, Art?
Well, we have a governor in Wisconsin who made up a deficit argument.
Yep.
And massively cut public expenditures, teachers, et cetera, and we're the lowest growth rate in the Midwest. So the same thing that they're talking about happening in Greece, they can't repay it. When you attack working people and you take away their money, don't expect that the economy is going to grow and be able to pay back debts.
Art, I appreciate your call. Jacob Kierkegaard, there's the argument. It's a class problem, and the top 1%, or however you want to quantify, is doing very well. This is all being dumped on the back of people that can't afford it. Wrong way to go, Jacob.
Well, I mean, I think that there certainly is an issue also in Greece where you can probably debate whether or not the cuts have been socially fair in nature. Because, I mean, I think the fact remains in Greece that there are sectors of the Greek economy, shipping and others, that are largely exempt from taxation. And, you know, tax evasion is almost always regressive in nature, in the sense that, you know, the richer you are, the more you have to hide. And certainly one of the arguments that that Syriza made during the campaign was that they wanted to go after what they alleged to be protected sectors of Greek oligarchs that the previous government had shielded from these cutbacks. So yes, I think there is an issue about the social fairness here. But I would still say that when you look at the overall elements of the public sector in Greece, and I guess I would particularly highlight the public pension system here, which was extremely generous and in many cases gave, you know, 100% of the final salary available in a public pension at a very low age. This very low retirement age. Mm-hmm. This is fundamentally an unsustainable system that has to be reformed.
Christopher Pissarides, if I may, sorry, Jacob, but I just got a minute here. Big picture, what do you see unfolding in front of us? You've got the Nobel Prize.
The big picture that I see is first of all, not complete forgiveness of debt. What the Greeks are saying, after all, and what we said many times, is that the debt should be repaid, but not now, give the country time to recover. Pensions, I agree, they were unsustainable, but a lot of reforms have been made there. In fact, I mean, don't forget that overall incomes and pensions were cut by 25%, which is a very big cut. Greece has done reforms. Reforms take up to 4 or 5 years to have an impact on the economy. And if Germany is worried, and your previous one or two of your previous speakers were worried, then I personally wouldn't have at all an objection to making the postponement of payment of debt conditional on reforms being carried out and the economy recovering. The reforms are needed. I would be the first person to emphasize that you don't make a labor market competitive. You cannot compete in today's world unless you do reforms and you bring your labor market up to date, modern ideas of how to run businesses, which are still absent in Greece. But you don't do it at a time when you are also forcing the country to pay its debts. And finally, one comment that I would give a response to your commentator, who said that
quickly, sir,
selective reading of history. We remember that the reason we're talking about this is that Germany and other countries are committed to European unity. I mean, they are flagging the idea of European integration, solidarity, Europe as one nation. That's why they should look at this debt issue more favorably. Otherwise, you might as well bring the drachma back and let it depreciate until it goes.
Christopher Pissarides, Nobel Prize winner in London. Thank you. Jacob Kierkegaard at the Peterson Institute. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking about the great Greek rejection of austerity in their elections over the weekend and what it says about what it means for Europe, maybe more of the world, our economies, our financial system. My thanks again to Professor Christopher Pissarides, Nobel Prize-winning economist out of the London School of Economics, who we had to rush away from just there as we hit the break, and to Jacob Kierkegaard, the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington. John Saropoulos joins us from Athens. Germans talking about what's been going on in Greece just yesterday after a meeting of the Eurozone finance ministers in Brussels. Dutch finance minister here, Jeroen Dijsselbloem, said this election has not solved Greece's problems.
I think we all have to realize, and I think the Greek people also realize, that the major problems in the Greek economy have not disappeared or haven't even changed overnight for the simple fact that the election took place.
But maybe there's another way to do things. Angela Merkel at the World Economic Forum in Davos just last week said the EU needs structural fiscal reforms, but we can have growth and sound fiscal policy.
I'm always for not painting matters in black and white. Quite often, so-called austerity is pitted against the so-called growth model. I think that this is totally wrong. We need a growth-oriented, sound fiscal policy.
Listeners, where are your sympathies here? What does your mind tell you? Nate writes to us on Facebook, says if Americans were asked to take on the kind of austerity measures that the Greeks have been asked to make, with the havoc they made in their economy, there would be riots in the streets. He means here in the USA. Salty says, on the other hand, how long can a country continue to spend more than they're bringing in? If you're in a club, don't you have to live by the club's rules? A challenge to those rules right now from the new power in Greece. John Saropoulos, Athens-based journalist, joins us from Greece. With us right now as well from Washington is Sherazad Rahman, Professor of International Finance, Business, Professor of International Affairs at George Washington University. She's director of the European Union Research Center there. Sherazad Rahman, thank you very much for being with us. Welcome back to On Point.
Thank you.
This isn't just a Greek issue. There's tremendous pressure all over Europe. Spaniards watching Greece very closely, Italians, Irish, and even where people aren't looking for immediate relief. Tremendous political pressure on this continent now. How serious is it, Sherazad?
That's the key. You hit it on the head. Whatever happens here will reverberate in Spain, Portugal, and Italy, and those noises are already there. They're looking to see what happens. I personally believe that the Greek political establishment, the new prime minister, is making a political miscalculation. He's assuming that Germany the view on this situation is the same as it was a few years ago, where a Greek exit was not on the table at all. There's been a shift here a little bit. The Greek prime minister believes that it'll be mutually assured destruction, and hopefully that will be a deterrent for both sides. I don't think that's the issue this time.
Meaning you think Germany is more open to Greece simply leaving the European Union?
Meaning you're not hearing voices that it is an unacceptable situation.
John Saropoulos, would Greeks be stunned if they make their big demands and get into, eyeball-to-eyeball confrontation here and end up out of the EU?
Well, the Syriza party has done an about-turn on the position of default. Back in the 2012 elections, they were threatening a unilateral stopping of payments, of servicing of the debt, which is technically a default. And that would have had a knock-on effect on the euro. But since then, since May of 2012, they have stopped saying that. They have said that they want to reach a consensual agreement with their European interlocutors. And that has been emphasized particularly strongly in this election campaign. Even in his acceptance speech on Sunday night, his victory speech to his supporters, Alexis Tsipras, stressed this again. So I don't think the Syriza position is to rely too heavily on the nuisance value of Greece. It is more, I think, now to rely on the political correctness of being somewhat more concessionary, somewhat more equal with those European, for Germany, I mean, to be more equal with those European countries who have simply mishandled their finances. And I think the Syriza is banking on the political correctness of that, on the image that Germany stands to gain from such a concession to the Greeks.
Sherazad Rahman, you've said there's a real crisis in Europe now that's bigger than Greece and bigger than the left-wing politics of the winning party in Greece. What is that crisis?
Well, there's a number of things going on that have been mentioned. They've got a group of countries that originally, when they joined the euro, were not in good shape, and they've suffered primarily because of the crisis that began in the United States. So I think that's an on-rolling issue. The income inequality issue is huge. And we've got, anytime there's unrest, economic unrest in Europe, you'll see that there's a focus on immigrants. There's a huge backlash now against immigrants, especially Muslim immigrants in Europe, which is creating even more political chaos in a lot of these countries.
Some of these countries have right-wing anger, plenty of it, that you, are saying, Shahrazad, is not unrelated to the same thing that's brought out left-wing anger in Greece.
Absolutely, they're exactly the same thing. Anytime you've got austerity measures that are this severe, that have been put into place with 25% unemployment, you're going to get the hard right and the hard left come out. And usually the Europeans will go after two issues, and that is immigrants, and then they attack the EU institutions themselves.
They don't want to let up, they don't want to just be forgiving debt right and left. Germans certainly don't. Finns don't. Others, we heard the Dutch financier there saying he didn't. At the same time, Europe is now talking about some of the kind of quantitative easing, bringing more money into the system that the U.S. went very hard on very early on. Is that an attempt to answer this quandary, Shahrazad?
Well, that's Mario Draghi's, who is the president of the ECB, way of calming the markets down. He's doing exactly what needs to get done amidst this chaos. You've got to understand one thing. This has been mentioned before, that yes, reforming in the middle of a crisis or debt repayment is very, very difficult. But the Greeks do not have the structural reform in place to renegotiate a debt. A debt maturity extension, yes. But the new prime minister is promising jobs, more money, better lifestyle. That's not going to happen. And, we've been here before, Tom, many times. It's the same message again. It's a populist message which cannot be delivered. We've been 8 years into this crisis. And I would say, you've got another decade here before this country gets out of this mess.
What do you expect to emerge then? I mean, he's promising right now, and you heard, I don't know if you heard, but at the top of the hour, we heard a Greek woman in the street saying she feels hope, she feels optimistic for the first time in years. And you're saying, sorry, 10 more years of this. What happens here, Shahrazad?
The same thing that happened after the last election and the ones before that and the ones before that. They're very optimistic, the ones that win, and then the reality hits the ground. So I think what he'll come home with is probably a debt maturity extension with promises of getting some reforms done this year, but he's not going to be able to deliver on more jobs, on better lifestyles and living standards. There's going to be lower labor costs in Europe and a lower living standard, especially in Greece particularly.
Watch out for the implications of that politically. Patricia in Hopkinton, Rhode Island. Patricia, thank you for calling. You're on the air. Hello, Patricia, are you there?
Thank you very much for having my call.
Yes, you're on.
Look, I'm calling as an American who has lived in Europe for a long, long time. I lived for 15 years in Ireland. I lived for 12 years in Portugal, two of the countries who are among this austerity victims. And I'd like to make, I'll ask people to make and look at a series of parallels. Mm-hmm. First of all, I retired back to America in 2004. And when this crisis started over in Europe, I began hearing all over the American papers this acronym, PIGS.
Standing for PIGS. Portugal, Italy, PIGS. Ireland, Greece, Spain. Well, yes.
This is not a term that leads one to believe that the user is taking an impartial position.
No, it's a little cheeky. I agree. It became irresistible for a while. But what does it tell you?
I frequently to visit in Italy and in Ireland and Portugal, and they never heard this expression there, It was exclusively put, as far as I can tell, in the English language newspapers. Of course, the acronym only makes sense. Okay, so I'm starting from the position that there's not, innocence on the part of the users of this terminology. Mm-hmm. There's a long-term plan there. The other thing is this. Let's take this word crisis that keeps getting tossed around. Well, but nobody goes back to refer to Naomi Klein's book, The Shock Doctrine, and the clever use of crises by the global financial cabal to impose this kind of poverty and austerity on the world. I mean, does no one remember her using this chapter after chapter? Create a crisis, then go in and undermine the country, then reduce the living standards, then concentrate more wealth in the hands of the already wealthy?
Yes, we read it, we recall it, but what about Greek responsibility here for all the borrowing, for the things that now need reforming? What about that side of the equation, Patricia?
Yeah, let's go to the question of lenders and borrowers. Mm-hmm. The woman who's been speaking just now used this expression, you know, when these countries came in, they were not in great shape. So the lenders didn't know this? The rich countries in the EU didn't know when they were lending all this money to these poor countries that they were not in great shape? That sounds exactly to me like the American bank crisis in 2008, when the banks, the mortgage reviewers, yeah, all knew very well they were lending money to poor people, and yeah, then suddenly when they want it back,
they were shocked. Patricia, we've got it. Our time grows short. Let me take it, if I may, to Shahrazad Rahman. Shahrazad, this is all about a global financial cabal using crisis to impoverish and enrich themselves.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think anybody really benefits from a crisis in the long run. I think that Patricia did hit the point that there was abject market failure. The markets were lending money to Greece at the same rate they were lending money to Germany, assuming there was the same risk factor. And that was absolutely not true. What they believed was that Germany would bail out Greece if it ever got into trouble, and now that's in the Eurozone, it'll behave itself. One of them wasn't true. And so there was market failure in lending to them at such low rates. They should never have got those rates.
Is there a renegotiation kind of somehow going on under the covers here between lenders and borrowers, some kind of reimagining of the global financial system, or is that just a vain hope of a new party in Greece?
Well, no conspiracy here, except that the markets have woken up and got a reality check that Greece, whether it's in or out of the Eurozone, doesn't look like Germany, and you cannot lend to that country at the same rates as a Germany or another higher developed economy.
Though they've already got an awful lot of money that's been lent. Camille in Charleston, South Carolina. Camille, you're on. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Always a pleasure. Just a few things. Mm-hmm. This sounds like, from what I understand, the EU's austerity measures did not deal with what they understand the problem to be in Greece in the first place. And it seems they should have done that first.
Like what, Camille? What are you thinking of there?
Take some mansions. Billionaires usually have lots of them. Confiscate the mansions. That's where they should have started.
Okay. Okay, the shipping titans are racing for their attorneys as you speak. So what's the bottom line?
They have plenty of them. I'm sorry, what's your question?
Well, are you saying go after the corruption, go after the taxation problems, go after all that?
Precisely. I mean, the movie, The Untouchables. You go after, you go after them. You go after the Capones.
John Siropoulos, has the top end of Greek society paid its fair share to try and get out of this hole? And what about the hope of real reform here that might make Greece a more comfortable member of the club?
It depends largely on whom you ask, but the consensus opinion in the middle class and among working class people is that no, it hasn't. There has been a great deal of political pressure from the base for governments to pursue the so-called Lagarde list, a list of Greeks with Swiss bank accounts, mm-hmm, who are allegedly a good starting point, among whom to look for potential tax evaders. Now, this government has also said, senior members of this party have also said to me that they intend to pursue the names of people who have exported, wired money overseas in the last few years, in the beginning of the crisis particularly, as they sensed that perhaps the Greek banking system wouldn't be safe enough to hold their savings anymore. And they would particularly do this with a view to comparing the sums that were wired with the tax declarations that were made to see if the two are compatible and whether that money had been taxed or not. But no, the consensus opinion is that the 1% hasn't paid its due. Some people believe that the 1% is disproportionately responsible for hindering governments from reforming and deregulating the economy, because keeping the status quo protects their interests. And it'll be interesting to see whether the Syriza government does actually manage to pursue the tax evasion agenda. It has been extraordinarily difficult for the socialists and conservatives.
Shahrazad Rahman, Greek voters speaking up over the weekend, but you're saying these days that Americans are widely underestimating anger in Europe all the way around, right, left, and otherwise. What are the implications of this? If they have not only Greece, but the other parts of Europe, a very long, hard road here, and you know how that can twist and fire up politics, what are we looking at ahead of us in Europe, Sherzad?
More social unrest. I think that's in the cards. I think we have, as Americans, underestimated the anger at the economic situation in Europe. And again, I mentioned before, the anger always comes out in two forms with most European countries, and that is against immigrants and against the EU institutions. And this is, you've seen this across country. This is not just Greece and Spain and Italy. Here we're seeing this in countries like Germany and France as well now.
Is the U.S. dodging this bullet, this dynamic? Have we put ourselves in a different enough economic path or not?
I think we're dodging the dynamic for sure. I think our economic path is very different than Europe. Europe's future looks relatively bleak in terms of growth rates right now, and so this will continue the social unrest. But what we are not, what we're also dodging is the political reality on the ground in Europe.
It's strange for Americans because for many years now we've looked to Europe as another area of relative stability. No more?
No more.
Wow.
Not for a little while.
Yeah, no, that is a big change. Sherzad Rahman, it's always great to speak with you. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
John Syropoulos, what's your bet a year from now? Is Greece still in the EU?
Well, I think if you ask most people here, they would express serious misgivings, even with a renewed government here. I think people are still very much afraid of the future. I don't think most people here expect that Greece will miraculously recover overnight. It's not going to be the 100-yard dash. It's going to be the marathon.
Digging in for the long term here as we watch Europe. John Syropoulos in Athens, always great to have you as well. Thank you very much for joining us today, John.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, thanks for all your contributions as well. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.